previously.tv podcast network.
I don't know what happened, but
he stabbed her and he beat her over the head with a claw hammer.
Man.
You didn't have to tell me that.
Man. Poor mistake. She didn't deserve that.
I'm not sure my guests deserved the harrowing account of the murder of a trans woman in Mississippi, but that's what they got in Love and Hate Crime. And after they so nicely introduced me to the uniquely New York-y, say that five times fast, a murder on Orchard Street, too. All this and more in The Blotter Presents, episode 46. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents, previously.tv's take on all things TV true crime. I'm your host, Sarah D. Munting, and I am joined by two guests today, Chris Huff and Allison Lo Huff. Hello, Huffs.
Hello.
So, we meant to cover Unsolved, which was about the murders of Biggie and Tupac. Yeah. We did not get screeners for that, so we went to a plan B, which we did have screeners for, Love and Hate Crime. Quite a different vibe, needless to say.
Indeed.
That's what we're covering in our Most Wanted section today. Before we get into it, as sort of quickly as we can manage, because it is gritty... Here's the case file per the Investigation Discovery press materials. In the first episode of Love and Hate Crime, viewers travel to the rural South to follow the story of Mercedes Williamson, a transgender teen who was murdered by her gang member boyfriend, Josh Vallum. Sometimes pronounced Valium by the participants. Don't think that's correct.
Didn't seem
wish,
right.
Wish there were Valium involved here. Engrossed in a lustful relationship, Vallum claims the shock of finding out that his partner was born male made him lose control and kill her. As details of the relationship unfold, Vallum holds fast that his act of rage was fueled by gay panic and trans panic. However, as evidence begins to mount, could his gang, the Latin Kings, have had more of an influence? Spoiler, no.
There's so much going on in this hour of television that I was shocked by the whole thing. I did not even read the case file before we watched it, so I didn't know until.
Neither of us did. And we were so shocked, like when the trans part came out, we just stared at each other in disbelief. And we did it for so long, I actually had to like pick up the remote and pause it while we continued to stare at each other open mouthed.
Yeah.
Because we did not see it coming.
There were so many, it was a lot of layers.
Yeah. I mean, so many layers. And then occasionally a layer is unpeeled and then they just peel it and go right past it.
Right.
We'll get into that later. But I mean, this aired as you're listening to this on Wednesday. I believe this premiered Sunday. Mm-hmm. This is a limited series from Investigation Discovery via the BBC. And the BBC is not... I mean, they're not doing that thing that you would expect from an ID show where, like, the South becomes a character and, like, not a good character. They're pretty frosty about that part of it. But on the other hand, they're also pretty frosty about, like, crime scene photos.
Uh-huh. With I couldn't
insect
believe.
Involvement.
Yes.
Like the, yes.
This is Roof Stoof, and like I watch a lot of this stuff, but this is harsh stuff,
yeah.
Which I guess is a good thing. But we open on this close up of Josh Vallum talking about how I don't think we have a clip of this, but talking about how he's secure in his relationship with God, but he's pretty sure Mercedes is in hell. And he feels bad.
Yeah, I wish I should have clipped that because that to me was like, it's so the twists and turns, the involvement of God. And P.S., I don't think anybody in this particular town has ever been to church in their lives like that. But it's this is like a something that they fall back on.
Yeah, this is the essence of Southern cultural religion, which is no matter what I do, as long as I'm okay with God, I'm the right side of the issue.
That is correct.
That personally innocent person who is not okay with God is going to hell.
Right.
And that's what we live
Even though that person was killed by me.
By me.
Yes. Pretty sure the Bible says you're not supposed to do that shit.
It's kind of a big deal.
Kill God what doesn't you found like that person. Deck.
Yeah. And Valum is like frequently seen like quite performatively reading aloud from Leviticus, which do not.
Right. Please don't.
Any Old Testament stuff.
He has in the beginning, like his, 10,000 yard stare that he does with his little glasses and, straight into the camera. Like he has no problem looking with his straight face and making excuses for himself, as we can hear in clip two.
Oh, God. Yes.
I was deceived and lied to. It doesn't make what I did right. But things could have went a lot differently had the truth been shared.
Yes, is that a fact? They could have went. It's a very uniquely Mississippi structure, syntax right there. Things could have went a lot differently. Yes, yeah, I guess
might,
they could
might
have.
Could.
We might not all should have done that.
There's also, I forget if I clipped this for our visual aids, which you can always find on our social media, which is at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I think I decided not to because it was maybe just inflammatory to everyone. Mm-hmm. But there's a, they pan past this yard display with an American flag and many teeny blue and pink crosses. And it's dedicated to the little Americans whose lives were lost in the abortion war.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so we see that so often, but that doesn't even register anymore. Yeah. It's like, it just people do that all the time.
That's rough.
You get west of or south of Delaware, frankly, you start seeing the billboard, and even in Jersey, actually, the billboards with like abortion product on a billboard. Like, oh my God, people are driving.
Right.
Although there is not a proud Alabamian who would claim a Virginian as a fellow Southerner. So.
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to watch things like this. I didn't grow up in a town, whatever town this is. I don't think
it was around Foley
County, but
it was the Foley High School. So it was around Foley, which is like down on the coast.
Right.
But I think it's near the border of Alabama.
Yeah. Down toward the Gulf Coast.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause part of Alabama is so narrow. There.
Yeah. So, I didn't grow up in a town like this, but I know these people, and like I feel like I can see their wheels turn. You know, the generational wheels of excuse making. Like when you don't have anything else to do, this is what your life becomes, and it becomes so small that you will take a stand on something when it's obviously wrong. It's just so sick. And, we have a clip now of, I guess, one of the good guys in town, the sheriff's captain that was the lead investigator, who kind of explains a little bit about the top layer mindset in clip three.
I was the senior investigator on the case. This case was different from the start, and it continued to take different twists and turns. You know, everybody in George County is good Christian people that love the country lifestyle and enjoys being around their family. The crime that took place involving Josh Valium and Mercedes Williamson, it's not something that happens every day. Actually, it's the first time something like that's ever taken place.
That you know of. I mean,
I sincerely doubt that.
Well, this is the thing I had a question. Because When the police first mentioned it, when they first announced who was killed, they used the male name. But then all these people are using Mercedes, which is no small thing this community to actually.
They use she. They're using the she pronouns and a lot throughout. So,
except her one friend who was reminiscing about her called her Michael, her birth name.
Right. Yeah. Her friend but, Destiny, of course. Her name is Destiny.
I will also add that we saw Ben Brown at a Pee Wee football game complete with Pee Wee cheerleaders, which in full makeup. Go ahead, girls.
Yes.
But they look like little drag queens. There's so much makeup on these 7-year-olds and you're kind of like, do y'all not see the chasm between...
They don't see the chasm.
Your small town cheer squad is not going to make it to the Disney World cheerleading competition if you don't start young.
Exactly. So they got to get ready for their home pageant, which is coming
up. Fair enough. But there's just so much going on here. Like Michael, even when he was presenting as sort of like a bi-curious eyeliner wearing goth, more than a trans person, his family put him out before I think he even, began full-time identifying, or like when he was out of the house, he was she was Mercedes, but when she went home, he had to be Michael, and even that was not enough, and he was put out on the street. And then you find out also, like, Vellum's parents, like, I'm not exactly sure what was going on with the dad. Certainly, he was very concerned that the dad not
think he was gay.
That he's gay, but then there's all this gay porn on his phone.
That painful scene where he was trying to explain, like, they put that on my phone, and I didn't. It's like,
dad is like leaping to be like, well, you just never know what they can put on a phone. And like, he desperately also wants to believe this. And then the Latin Kings thing comes in. I'm sorry.
And like the BBC.
Shouldn't you be Latin?
There are not many choices in small town Mississippi for gang life. So
you can't be a Crip.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think
the Latin Kings open it up a little bit because they're like, look, we got to get some coverage and this is the best we can do. He has dark hair. Come on.
At one point, Allison was like, wait, they write their rules down like in a Word document? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not?
That was really blowing my mind. It was like in the bylaws of the Latin Kings organization. I'm like, the bylaws? Like,
and it's in a binder. Like, I know it's an evidence binder, but just that it was in a 3-ring binder. I was like, what the hell?
A large binder. Like somebody, there's a Latin King out there who's got the local bylaws typed up for his chapter in rural Mississippi.
For nothing.
Yeah, he's like, I lost my flash drive.
If he's saying he killed her because it's against the Latin King's rules, like, it's not rule number one. It's not even rule number five. It's rule 21 of 21.
Right.
Like,
doesn't that seem... It's like one of those constitutional amendments, like, I don't know, like 24, that's like, you have to be this old to be a senator. Like, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. People aren't going on Facebook going, let's talk about the 10th Amendment on the Bill of Rights.
Yeah. How many Latin Kings are there in this area? Like, what did it come out in a, it showed a picture of, their gang on the beach, hanging out, like. Who's going to, I don't know. What are the consequences if he just broke up with her,
Yeah.
I don't know.
And how big is this town that he thought he could get by with it?
True. Yeah. He was just like, well, she's from over there in Foley, so ain't nobody ever going to know about this. And then he brought her to parties and like, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, how did people, I think Allison pointed out, she's like, look, this poor 17-year-old kid, it has not gone and gotten breast implants. So people knew.
Yeah, that really, they didn't. And I had a problem with this when I thought about it with the BBC. Like, it had to be fairly obvious that Mercedes had not transitioned, you know, into actual womanhood. Like, those could not have been real boobs. You know, they're not having that operation down there, you know. So, like,
yeah,
it had to be.
Not at this. I mean, right. When you've been put out on the street, you're not, you don't have the money to do the top surgery, I would imagine. Although,
yeah,
we'll get into some weird arithmetic later.
Right. Okay. Like, she's like hooking at a, you know, down at the Jiffy Lube on, well, on the highway. Anyway,
the Robbie Wilco truck stop.
Right.
There's a lot of magical thinking. I'm sorry. Were you about to introduce clip four?
Because
there's a lot of. Okay, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, all of this insane magical thinking when we're trying to, like, add it all up and come up with reasoning and stuff, all takes place about this relationship, which is laid out in clip four.
It seemed like we had been dating longer than 2 months. So I'd go over there 2 or 3 times a week. I'd even stay the night, you know. And I had talked to her about having sex, and she just said she wasn't ready yet. You know, I thought, well, I mean, she's a good girl, you know. I hope she's not saving herself for marriage, is what I was thinking. She would give me blowjobs to, I guess, appease my sexual appetite, but that was it. I thought that maybe Mercedes was a virgin.
I mean,
2 months.
Speaking of binders, I have some points here. And I forgot to mention this, but I think as of the crime being committed, he was like 10 years older than her also.
Well, right.
So
yes. It's said in the early shots of him in court, you know, when he's so desperate to plead guilty because he doesn't want it to come out in court and like ruin his family's reputation that he's merely a murderer and not, you know, a gay murderer.
Right.
Anyway, like he said, he was 29.
Yeah.
She was 17.
Yeah.
And he was also divorced. And so I thought, well, who had he been married to? And like,
yeah, that never comes up again.
Yeah.
There's the fact that like, just the, you know, everything but approach
mm-hmm.
to
yes.
sex. That's like, okay, well, but she gave you blowjobs. Like that's still okay. What? Sure.
I'm sorry.
Whatever. She's a good girl. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was happening where it's like,
girl.
She's doing this. And then he's like, can I touch any part of you? And it's like, nope. Nope.
No. Yeah. There is like a metal shield between her and him, you know, except for the blowjob area. Like, I just find it absurd that he thinks he can put this forward. And just so pitiful, you know, that he thinks like, well, I'm a man and I killed this person as soon as I found out that they were the bad person. Also,
well, not to mention, I don't know, like if the argument, I don't believe that he didn't know, like, I think it is possible to be willfully naive. And in a clip mm-hmm. that's coming up, it'll be like, okay, so she was just walking down the street where I happened to be like near a truck stop. And it's like, what are you doing? She seems surprised to see me. Like, yeah, because she's working.
Right.
Like allegedly.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. But I just kept thinking of the documentary about Brandon Tina, where some of the interviewees were like, look, you might not know, but you knew.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you, on some level, you know.
Right. Except I don't think that, I definitely agree with you that it's possible. And that's a great example of that. But I think with him, I think he probably openly knew the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and
I
because
think
law enforcement in this area is definitely inclined to like, hack your phone and put a bunch of search history on it that involves gay porn.
That's right.
Seems totally legit.
Yeah, he seems like a crazy narcissist, honestly, and I was just amazed by the whole sequence of events that he took himself through.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Although there's a lot of stuff that's like, we meet Margaret Baker, who's a reporter for the Sun-Herald and reported on this case. And it sort of comes out, as it were, at the end that she doesn't exactly say it, but she's like, well, you know, being different around here is dangerous and I'm right. different too. So right. I think she's also gay. Mm-hmm. But she had this, you know, she's introing like what Mercedes's life sort of was like after she was put out of her parents' house. And then, you know, when she met Vallum in clip 5.
High school friends, you know, they remember her as this fun, happy-go-lucky, good friend. She had this other side to her that was all about making a buck. She had a $200 a day crack habit. She did what she had to do to make money. That included prostitution.
$200 a day?
That was never mentioned again.
Yeah, they never went back to it. It's
yeah.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah. And it's like high school friends. She was happy-go-lucky and so loving, comma, and crack addict.
Whore.
Prostitute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, thing? All right, well, she's been curbed by her parents, mm-hmm. so she has to do something. So the prostitution part, although even that is never confirmed, I don't think. Was she ever arrested by that, did they say?
They did not say.
Okay.
But I'm also wondering, I'm far from an expert in this, but you know, in a town with very limited options for this person to explore sexuality, that might be the avenue that was open. So it's like, I don't know about the crack thing, but the prostitution thing might have been a much more complicated explanation than simply, I'm doing this to make money.
For crack?
Yeah. I just wish they'd gotten into that more, and especially the crack part, that it's like, is there $200 worth of crack in this entire town? I don't think so.
I know. I was like, do you mean meth? Because, yeah. Yes, meth. Absolutely.
That
crack.
Too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. $25 will probably do ya. For a day?
I know.
Yeah, that's too a long. Lot of
I
crack.
Know. I really called... my eyebrows rose on that, and I thought, well, this will be interesting, but they never mention it again. They don't they don't give a picture of Mercedes. The only one, I mean, Destiny, of course, you know, does her best, you know, to paint a picture of this kid who it seems like she barely knew either.
And I also, real quick, wanted some more info on the crack house that the reporter went to see.
Yeah.
Like, drove up to in the middle of the night and knocked on the door.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. That's what I was saying. The only one who gives any kind of picture of Mercedes as a person is the neighbor of that crack house, whose name is Jimmy.
Old Jimmy.
We meet him in clip 6.
Oh, Jimmy.
But I guess it took me about a week to figure out what was going on, you know? I never had a problem with it. Back, she spent the night over here one night. I sleep on my couch most of the time.
She
said she was having a problem arguing and stuff. So go back and get in that bed back here in the back. And, you know, she spent the night here and got up the next morning. You know, everything was fine. We had breakfast and whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But it was all good. But, no, I like Mercedes. I like Mercedes. Mercedes was a good person. And, I'd hate to see anybody say something bad about her date, too.
I really wish that footage existed of these two just eating eggs.
Oh, yeah. Me, too. But Jimmy was my favorite person in this thing. Look, first of all, I want to say that Margaret was very brave to go, because you don't know what's going to happen when you walk up to something like that.
There's a lot of big dogs in this town that have not eaten in a while. So, like going on someone's property. I mean,
right.
And quite frankly, if you ever want to meet old Jimmy, come on down. We know about half dozen people that are pretty much old Jimmy.
I actually felt my heart grow a size when I saw Jimmy, because my brother lives in a town like this, and he knows some Jimmys and has sometimes been a Jimmy. So like it cut me pretty deep to see him. But this, by the way, this clip is before we find out that Mercedes is a boy. So yeah. When he's like, you know, hacking through that laugh at the beginning, took me a while to figure out what was going on. We thought he was talking about that she was a prostitute at the crack house. Like it took him a while to figure out that she was male. But then he still, this is like the damn millionaire's defense. Like it's, the worst thing can be happening with somebody, but it's like, well, you know, they all right. You know, that guy's a damn millionaire. He's got $5 in his pocket. It's like, she's all right. You know, ain't never done nothing to me. So I told her, let's have some breakfast.
Yeah. The bar is pretty low. It's like, as long as someone doesn't like try to kill me, that right. person's all right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the, friend of all of ours's brother, who absolutely a racist and using terrible language, and then an African-American dude pulls up who's his ride, and I'm like, so that's your friend? And he's like, yeah,
he's all right.
Yeah.
They're only N-words if you don't know them, like, right. Okay. Yes. You know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's no. Old Tommy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like when I was in the military, I heard people railing against gay people. I'm like, but we work with one, Steve, over here. They're like, well, Steve's okay.
He's
like,
one of the good ones.
Don't you get it?
I know.
Not Steve.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm not talking about Steve. But yeah, but the, you know, Jimmy is just so, he's just such the poster boy of that, of living in a place like that. I mean, these are places that these microcosms of life have formed because these people have all fallen through every crack there is to fall through. Like they're at the bottom of the crack heap, you know, like nobody cares about them. So they're making these lives, and these characters all exist on this very small stage. So to stay alive, you pretty much either have to accept somebody or kill them. And that's what's happened to Mercedes. Honestly. Yeah.
And I think also there's a certain, I think Jimmy maybe, that has lost the war with substances.
Oh yeah.
Which,
oh,
yeah. It, you know, it happens.
Long
and,
ago.
And it's kind of the no atheists in a foxhole thing. Like, I think where the shoulder meets the grass, everybody's yep. pretty accepting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he drew the line and was like, well, then they brought heroin in. And I was like, I'm not going to have any of that. Okay. That's your line.
Yeah, that's right.
That's your line, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Heroin.
Jimmy's like, those people over there,
yeah,
50 yards from me are trash, but I at least am not.
Yeah. Well, did you catch the shot of the spoon in the kitchen sink? Because
yes.
I'm like, that's a shooting up spoon.
Yeah. Jimmy is hanging on by a thread. He'll probably live to be 90. You know, he's like that old wizened person out in the woods that just, Lord knows. I mean, it kills
their
me.
Their body has been
like
completely
that.
Pickled by everything yes. they're putting in it.
Yep.
It's like Keith Richards. Like he'll outlive us all.
He's the Keith Richards of Southern Gulf Coast, Mississippi, because he probably lives on cigarettes, honestly.
Old Jimmy.
Bless.
Well, let's not forget that when Josh does pick up Mercedes on the fateful day, he's sure to explain to her exactly what's going to happen. Complete with certain details about the menu. It's like,
right.
Well, all right, let's just listen to the clip and then I have a question.
Okay.
I said, you don't have any plans? She said, no. I said, well, you do now. Get in. She was like, well, what are we going to do? I told her, well, we're going to go smoke some weed. And it's a Saturday. My dad's probably going to be grilling. So we go and we'll have some ribs and some baked beans and potato salad, all the good old Southern meal, and we'll have sex. And she said, okay.
Because you mentioned the potato salad.
Well, hold on.
But she's like, no sides? Fuck you. Oh, okay.
Potato salad.
Look, it's a very obvious, logical thing. You get high, you get the munchies, so then you eat, and then you got a lot of energy, so you have the sex.
I think this was Josh's attempt to make it sound like, wholesome, you know, like, yes, like I told her, yeah, we're going to have a nice meal.
And then
meal.
She had a nerve to bring a second dick to the party. That's not how we do down here.
That's right. Okay. You just ate my daddy's ribs, and now you're going to whip it out?
My mama made that potato salad.
That's my grandmother's
in
recipe.
Jail. Jesus. And then the actual crime occurs. According to friends, they had been having sex, like penetrative sex, all along. He knew, whatever.
Destiny rats him out. Putting herself on the line, no doubt, with the Latin Kings.
Yep.
She reveals, you know, oh, he said over the back of the seat and blah, blah, you know. Yeah. That's the details
We haven't even talked about his mama yet, but I think she sums up, like, the entire show. Like, everyone was thinking they could get away with stuff when she was like, I thought I could do a little bit of drugs.
Right. Yeah, Josh's mom.
No.
And the tone of regret. She's like, turns out that's not the case. And then there's, like, a wistful silence, like, uh-huh.
Which
I know.
A shame.
It is. It's true.
It's true. I feel you, girl, but we can't do it.
Yeah, it's like, Josh, I thought I could be a little gay. No. Nope.
No. Or just like the, you know, this is the kind of gay you can be is the murderous kind.
Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh.
So according to him, he finally makes a grab and discovers the biological situation. Gets out, like, kicks her out of the car, I think, and then jumps out, gets his pocket knife, stabs her a bunch. That does not work. She runs into the woods and he follows her with a claw hammer. And then he takes off, and then his dad is like, so people are saying you were covered with blood. I'm calling the cops. And then Josh is disappointed that his dad didn't offer. He's like, not that I expected him to cover it up for me, but I was a little disappointed that he didn't offer, like, son.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like, he that to me is just so indicative of his narcissism, that he was upset that his dad didn't just completely say, I'm going to do whatever I can to get you out of this or to help you. His dad, I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
I think that's only in fiction. Like, in the first 48, like, family members, they turn to the mom and they're like, well, you need to find him. You need to help us find him.
Right.
And the mom's always like, all right, well, he sometimes stays with his friend. Like, they just give it right up.
Right.
Because they're like, otherwise he's going to get killed. So, yeah. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They get really sketchy on the details of exactly how all this happened. And there's, like, where the dad was saying, well, people said you showed up to my door covered in blood. I'm like, and then that never gets explained or mentioned again.
Yeah. And it's like, but weren't y'all just eating ribs? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think they're just trying to kind of create more ambiguity by leaving out details that actually exists in the case. Cause you know, was Josh gay or wasn't he? Well, if you go outside the show, it's pretty, the reality of the situation is not nearly as ambiguous as the show makes it seem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. I mean, I don't need everything explained, but it also seemed a little like, okay, once we know where we are, sort of like in the cultural geography of the country, then it's pretty clear what happened. Yeah. And then it's also pretty clear that the Latin Kings thing is like, I don't know, an attempt to not create ambiguity exactly, but like add another layer of mystery that isn't like there's mystery there, like the Latin Kings, really? But and why did you write all this down? But in terms of this crime, I think it's like, in order for it not to be just like a straight ahead, horribly bleak account of a hate crime.
Yeah.
They're adding this other layer to it, and even like nobody seems to understand why he just pled to the murder, but that's explained in our final clip in this section.
To have a defense of, you know, I didn't know, I thought I was with a girl. He's groping her and suddenly he says, you know, he feels, he actually called it cock and balls to me. I see red. I feel a penis and go nuts. A large portion of this state would completely understand and condone. If Josh had gone to trial and claimed that he had penis panic, it wouldn't take but one or two jurors to get him off, and I believe that could have easily happened.
I mean, okay, phrasing.
Yeah. The double entendres here are just flying left and right.
Come on. Max.
I know, little...
Think about it.
I know. Just talk it to a tape recorder. Play it back for yourself. Oh, God.
I have never heard the phrase penis panic before I saw this show.
Yeah, I mean, I went to girl school and penis panic meant something a little different. Different kind of panic. Everyone survived as far as I know.
You're right.
I mean,
it's like the panic of 1829.
Look, listeners, we're not trying to be disrespectful. Obviously, this is, you know, terrible that this happened and extremely depressing that the penis panic defense could work. And I agree that it would work. A jury of his actual peers, for sure.
Right. If they could round up, 12 people as dumb as he was, I guess it would have worked and it would have probably been easy to do so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't think they'd have much of a challenge doing that. I've been on juries and it's dumb out there, folks. I mean, I don't know. This was dark and
yes.
I mean, but it was well made. It was good. It was like, I mean, better than I expected. I thought based on the title, which was kind of that like disrespectfully cheesy play on words from ID Channel, that it was going to be a lot of the customary like filler and it wouldn't be that great. It's good. It's just tough. So I don't know if I'm going to watch. There's nothing else on the schedule for this at the moment. So I don't know when they're airing the other. I think there's two more.
Two but more of the same story?
I don't think so. I think it's different stories.
Oh, okay.
But this was plenty. This was 10 pounds of story in a 5-pound bag.
Truly. They had room to do another hour on this and.
I said that to Allison. I was like, usually it's like, you know, the whole thing is in the first 15 minutes. They just keep repeating and filling in. And they did not do that here. Yeah. This just kept coming.
I found myself missing the, you know, B-roll of like crime scene tape fluttering forlornly. Like, please, I need a break.
Some fluttering. I know. It was a lot. And it some skillful editing. You're right.
It was very well made. Yeah, it kind of seems like this is like the modern Southern version of Theodore Dreiser. Basically, like, I'm going to kill someone because I made a mistake. And things just get worse.
We're pretty much living in that every single day. So, yes.
Or like Flannery O'Connor, but even more cynical about humanity.
Right.
Wasn't sure that was possible, but congratulations, Love and Hate Crime.
You
went there.
Yeah.
All right, let us move on then to our cold case section, which I wouldn't say is a, you know, picnic on Sunday by comparison, but definitely less harsh than the first part. It's called Murder on Orchard Street. It's a multimedia presentation that is available on Hulu and YouTube. Is that right? I watched it on Hulu.
Yes, it's on YouTube also.
And then I believe the reporter who's sort of at the center of things, Christina Keeley, is narrating a podcast on it as well. We'll have links to all that in the show notes. Let me just brief you on the case file. Per Gothamist's piece by Jen Chung. And sidebar, welcome back, you lot, Gothamist. 25-year-old Burke O'Brien was fatally shot on a Lower East Side stoop on a cold January night in 2003, just days after moving to New York City for a job as a foreign currency trader at Bank of America. No one was ever prosecuted for the murder, and now the cold case is getting a new look through a 7-part multi-platform series on NBC News' Nightline, A Murder on Orchard Street. The case remains open, and ABC News producer Christina Keeley, who had covered the investigation at the time, and the network's journalist shadowed the NYPD for the reality show NYPD 24/7, revisited the murder with Kenny Sylvia, the NYPD detective who was on the case. And then there's a tease for a possible new lead that could change the course of the case completely. This is pretty great. It's 7 episodes, at least on Hulu. They're each like 12 to 24 minutes long, which is so delightful because all the fillering that other shows do to kind of pad to one length or another is not really present. They did have this footage from this show, which I kind of want to track down now because it's amazing.
Too. Yeah.
But I don't remember this case, and I did not hear of the show before Allison recommended it to me. Allison, how did you come upon this?
I really now can't remember. I had read something about the multi-platform thing, and so I went back to find it, and I did, but I don't remember really how I came across it. And then when I started watching it, I thought, this is interesting. If... you know, I didn't get all the way into the case until we finished it last night, but like I just thought it was interesting that they tried this, you know, they used this footage and they're like, well, let's repackage this into this, you know, really unique thing. I'm going to listen to the podcast because I have some questions still, aside from what the visual portion that we get to see.
Yeah. It's probably that they're like, oh, well, it's Serial, because like everyone else, like, you got to have a true crime podcast. Even my cats have a true crime podcast.
Right.
But it's like, it turned out being something really cool. And of course, they did have this footage. So why not?
Yeah.
It's so New York-y, these accents on these dudes.
It was so good. It was like a real life Law and Order, like the cop shop and like just all the pieces of it, you know, these tiny rooms that they're all crammed into, like, you know, and he had the gun and who had, you know, where did he go? Like, it was like really the.
And that they're theorizing the same as we would, like, on web sleuths. It's pretty amazing.
It was a little disturbing.
Here's Detective Sylvia giving us the brief in clip 9.
Every cop's got that case. The one that you can't forget. The one that gets under your skin.
Good morning. It's 26 degrees at 6 o'clock. I'm Lee Harris. Here's what's happening.
Police are still looking for clues in the fatal shooting of a bank early today. 25-year-old Burke O'Brien was talking to his former college roommate after a night out and was shot in the chest inside a Lower East Side building as he tried to unlock the building's front door.
I mostly included that because of the 1010 Wins account of the case. Like I said, very New York-y. Their first theory is that it's his friend Forrest Bloda, I believe his last name is.
Yeah.
Who has one of those like hacky sack douche hats that shows up on ATM footage and then is in the apartment. And they sort of are like, this witness says that Forrest did it. Other witnesses are like, nah, there were other people there. They had puffy jackets on.
Right.
They got mugged, like Forrest said. But then there's this whole thing where, like, Burke's sister's friend was, like, making out with both Burke and Forrest. And then it was a love triangle.
That was my problem with it. We were talking about it this morning. Like, I could have used some reason that they might have thought, you know, some real substantial backup to that whole sister's friend, maybe hooked up with both of them. Like, you don't shoot somebody over that. Like,
frat bros are not that deeply in love with anybody.
That's more
at
of a
24.
High five
especially
situation.
Especially not this guy. Like, one look at that dude's hat, and you're like, no. Yeah.
No.
Like, this not. Is not how this goes down. And in any case, like, he, I think, was the point of the triangle who would have got shot. But
right.
The one cop and his glorious mustache are pretty... pretty convinced, at least in the first episode, that that's where they're at with it in clip 10.
Drinking, jealousy, rage, put that all together and you got a shooting. So that's where we're at.
I loved him.
Maybe out here in Bay Ridge where all y'all live. That's the thing. But in, I don't know, on Orchard Street in 2003, hell no.
Nah.
Yeah, I think it would have been like, Forrest was upset because Blake smoked the rest of his weed. I'm like, they might have killed him over that.
Yeah.
But jealousy, like, rage, no.
They never found the gun. Where would he have put it? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no way in which it makes sense, given that they can't find the gun. It's just, it makes no sense at all. But... Christina Keeley makes a good point in clip 11 about how the cops are as much into a tidy narrative as we are.
A lot of the times you had detectives who get really into telling a story. They love telling stories. Their whole job is kind of storytelling and figuring out how a story works. Several detectives found Forrest's story difficult to believe that someone who was robbing him at gunpoint wouldn't take that extra second to take his expensive watch.
He got this big, beautiful, you seen his watch? Nice. What do you call them things? It's a nice watch. Why don't you take it? You only got the $12?
Right.
Huh?
Yeah, you're right. I agree with you.
I mean, I guess I agree, except what probably happened is that Burke was like, eat a bee.
Right.
And he's like, no, you eat some lead, shot him. And then it's like, now he's supposed to stick around and make sure he gets the watch. Yeah. Like, nah. What clearly happened was shots were fired and then they were like, fuck, and ran off.
Exactly.
These are cops. I know cops. And one thing cops always say is like, criminals are dumb people. Like, they're not the smartest masterminds out there. So putting logic to what happened before they shot somebody is
I mean, what
an iffy proposition.
Yeah, and like to me, that footage is a great example of how these cops, they know they're on camera. You know, they have this embedded reporter there, and so they do love storytelling, and they kind of like, there are points where you can almost see them like cutting their eyes over to the camera, like are they getting this? You know, and they kind of blow it up.
Yeah, they're all
the
angling
drama a little bit.
They're angling for a consultant job on Law and Order. Right. Like, can you get me hooked up with this?
I can't understand how I never heard of NYPD 24/7. Because to me, like, Mustache Guy and Sylvia should have become major stars, you know?
Yes.
In huge stars. If that ever aired, which, I mean, I don't remember it at all.
I don't either. But I think it was on at around the same time as that, when Law and Order tried to follow the prosecutors in San Diego.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
And just no one cared but me. And they're like, it's not enough. It's not enough, Buncey.
Buncey, sit down.
But I do. I mean, we all got to try to track that down, because there's something very satisfyingly behind the scenes that about this that mostly does not feel performative. Like, mostly the cops, you can see that they're aware of the cameras, but in a way that's like not charming, but it's like refreshing and uncynical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in episode 3, Sylvia is trying to walk the family through what's going to happen when they come to retrieve Burke's body, which I thought was like, oh, it's not like that. Like, I hope I never find this out for myself, but here's clip 12.
I was at this guy's autopsy, and an autopsy is not a pretty thing to see. I'm looking at this guy now as a happy-go-lucky, you know, young, handsome guy with the whole world ahead of him, and now I'm at the Emmy's office, and he doesn't look anything like a human at all.
I want to try to prepare you for the identification process. It's not like it's in the movies. You're not going to be walking into a large refrigeration room, and they're going to open up a steel drawer and, you know, pull back a sheet. You're just going to walk in. You're going to be inside an office, and they're going to show you a Polaroid photograph. Okay, and it's just of his face, and that's how you make the identification.
I mean, there's something so that he's reassuring them, like, you're not going to see the incision.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I just thought, I mean, first of all, personally, I would rather get the drawer. Like, there's something even more depressing and horrible about that you get a Polaroid.
In
like,
an office.
Yeah.
In an office.
Why do I have to come down here for a Polaroid?
I know. Just, like, send it to my cell phone if that's what we're if that's right. how we're going to roll.
Yeah. Right.
But, yeah, I liked that, and I liked that he's like, look, you know, he's been doing this a while. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, autopsies, woof. Like, oh, okay. That was nice. That was a nice moment to sort of like of reality, like what the reality is of
the job.
Being a detective yeah. and that you also have this outreach part of it that you're talking to the family and that's tough. I also enjoyed their interaction with one of Burke and Forrest's neighbors who offered to quote unquote
Oh, this is my favorite.
13. I'm going to ask you a crazy question. You ever use psychic to help you?
Why, do you have any information?
Well, if you could bring me this person's clothing or something that, you know, part of his body, his hair, piece of skin, I might be able to help you. Well, I feel things. I mean, I'm very sensitive to things when I touch.
It's worth watching the entire series just to see the looks on the cop's face when this guy was like, and a piece of skin, maybe? You're like,
yeah.
Oh, but the cameras are there. I think usually yeah. they'd be like, fuck out of here. But the cameras are there. So they're just like,
yeah. They'd like kick him in the nuts and like walk
yeah.
away.
Thank you for your help on this.
Here's a piece
go.
Of skin from my knuckles. Oh my God. So good. And, oh, the accents are so... His demeanor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, they don't do... They're not, like, too crazy about this. Like, at the end of each episode on Hulu, there's, like, a Chiron, like, a card that's like, next time, here's yeah. what you can look forward
right.
to. And then before the final episode, if you want to come to this on your own, there will be some spoilers now. Okay. So they track the original witness who was sort of like increasingly in conflict with what they were hearing from other people. His, you know, feeling was that Forrest did it. Then Christina Keeley is looking at old footage like in 2016 or something and is like, well, the description from other witnesses was that it was an African-American guy with a, you know, pencil beard and a puffer jacket. And she's looking at the witness in the cop shop and she's like, oh, I mean, not that that couldn't be like several thousand people, but he does match that description. They track him down to Florida and then he's sticking with the story like that, you know, none of this is resolved. It's still an open yeah. case.
Right.
No one is talking about it on Web Sleuths either, which is annoying. Get on that, Web Sleuths. But this interview between the witness and Sylvia just gave me life in our last clip.
I think they went in the building.
After you called the police, what called the ambulance? What made you stick around?
Being nosy. New York. At this time, I'm like, okay, I'm waiting for them to show up. I could have left. I want to see at this point who got shot. One of the dudes is giving a statement to the police officer about what happened. Heard something about a black guy, or whatever. So the police officer standing next to me, I kind of like nudged him. I turned around facing him and I nudged him. He looked at me. I'm like, yo, he lying. It didn't happen like that. He's like, what? He's lying. I turned around. I like kind of nudged him.
And what you could have done was, listen, here's my name. Here's my phone number. It's 4:30 in the morning. I'm going home. If you guys need
no,
me, just give me a call.
You know why? Because like, he said it was a black guy. Now, if I go home at this point, who's the only black guy out there? Me walking down the block. So mm-hmm. you say that, I'm like, now they're going to try to throw it on race. If he give that statement, I can't let that rock because now I got to tell this police officer the story is bullshit starting at this point.
Okay, first of all, I am adopting let that rock immediately.
Yes.
Great way of putting it. Second of
yes.
all, why did you stick around? Because I'm nosy and I wanted to see who got shot. Come sit by me.
Right.
And third of all, this description... this exchange is literally every problem with the American criminal justice system in 1 minute.
Yes.
Bad eyewitness IDs, racial profiling, the fact that he's like, well, I can't leave now because if he's saying it's a black guy, I'm going to get swept up anyway. So I might as well stay here and try to tweak the story. Like, right. I think he saw what happened and it was not what he said, but he's got to stick by it now because otherwise they're going to pit it on him.
Right.
I don't think he did it, but it was like, man, what a, like, there is a lot in 1 minute of that clip.
It truly was great. Yeah. I'm like, okay, now we need to cut to a separate podcast about this for another 25 episodes because I want to know this guy's whole life and, you know.
Uh-huh.
What I want to say to cut to was, and here are the cases where someone got caught up in the exact same thing he said was going to happen to him. And just like the really quick scroll of every case.
Exactly.
Like hundreds and hundreds.
I mean, he pretty
it's
much
like whipping past.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm not going home. Are you kidding? Yeah. It's 4:30 in the morning and I'm walking while black. Nah.
He's like, I'm going to be proactive about this shit.
He was. He was like the most proactive of all times. Like he goes on to stay in the precinct for like 14 hours or something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to sit here until you tell me to my face that you don't think I did it, you know?
Yeah.
So either he's crazy and he's just one of those criminals who's like, I'm going to stick by the crime. You know?
But he's like, I'm witness.
And he continues to protect himself because he wouldn't allow them to show his face in that clip.
Oh, yeah.
Or his name or anything.
Yeah, and like gave them a fake phone number, but did call them back.
Right,
and
right.
was like, let's do this.
Right. I'm trying but he to also, educate like, you guys.
Yeah, but I think he's working for like a off-book construction company, and he's
as a Florida resident.
Probably a bunch of yeah.
Yeah, he's doing that's, Florida business.
That's not a good part of Florida.
That was a rough roof stew.
What is the good part of Florida?
Well,
socioeconomically speaking, he was not hanging out towards the top of the ladder.
Wherever that ladder may be reaching.
Yeah, this was not South
Beach. Where were they? Did they say?
I don't know.
It looked like Miami. It could have been Miami.
Yeah. They didn't say, but.
Or Jacksonville. Well, Florida basically
is
the same everywhere.
I was
going to
guess Jacksonville, but.
Yeah.
I got lost in Jacksonville once, and I still sometimes dream about it. It's not good.
And that's easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No shit. Hard to undo. I could not let that rock.
Yeah. Don't let that rock.
Could not rock.
Don't let that rock. Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for introducing me to a murder on Orchard Street because it did rock.
Yeah, and it did.
Well, yeah, it's good. I recommend it.
Yeah, I did want to plug this, by the way, because I just couldn't let this pass. If you happen to say, hey, let me go down to Orchard Street to see where this happened, the really excellent New York City Tenement Museum is like the next block over. That's where I was like, why do I know the name Orchard Street? Oh, History Museum. So, you know, two birds with one stone, if anyone would like to do that. Here's where the guy got shot. And here's a really good museum you can go to.
And it really, Sylvia comes back, I guess, in footage from like 2016 or 2017 and talks about like, this is a completely different Orchard Street from 2003. And it really is. And that's like, when I first started living in the city, which was way before that, it's like, yeah, that Orchard Street, you would go down a certain number of blocks past Houston and then you just stopped and you stopped well before that, or you had a cab just like drive right up to the door of the bar, like on the sidewalk, and let you out directly because you would get mugged, and I did get mugged. So,
oh no,
yeah. I mean, it was real sad. It was like a rusty knife. He's and we're at the ATM. We're like, okay, like probably this is not going to happen, but why risk it?
Yeah, right, here's some money.
Just take it.
Yeah. Back when the dime savings bank was a thing. Yeah. All right. Well, this was a better than usual pair of properties that we looked at today from a better than usual pair of guests. Hey, buddies.
<That's right. laughs>
Do you guys have anything to plug before I wrap this up? Where can listeners find you guys?
Can be found at previously.tv. I'm recapping in the epic old school long form style, Call the Midwife, starting in March. So please join me there to give that a big long read. I'm also every once in a while at the blog for MHC Choice, which is a streaming service that shows foreign television. I watched a show, the thing I most recently wrote about, and I write about mysteries there, Wheel of Murder style, but the thing I most recently watched there was called A French Village. Literally the best thing I've ever watched from anywhere, anytime. The best TV show I've ever seen.
Wow.
It's in French. It's fantastic. So I just wrote about it, so I wanted to mention that.
I'm on hiatus. Yeah. Although
Chris is on hiatus.
The excellent time travel show Timeless is about to debut, and I'm sure you'll find me on a discussion board somewhere discussing the inner workings of time travel.
Excellent. Perhaps that'll be our discussion board. And if you have something to add to the Blotter Presents case files, please visit our forums at previously.tv/forums. Or hit me on social media at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. My guests are Allison Lohuff and Chris Huff. You can find them on Twitter at Lohuff and at Meat of Cheese, respectively. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.